Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
True Hauntings is a Frightfully Good production.
With 1,000 years of history to its name, Oxford Castle and Prison has seen many people come and go, but some remain long after their first departure. Oxford Castle and Prison was recognised by the BBC as one of the most haunted buildings in the UK.
Paranormal investigators have made contact with many spirits that haunt the castle and its grounds. The site has seen conflict and invasions in its early history, and then it became a prison, which added another layer of misery and torture. If ever there was going to be some residual energy in a place, then surely it's going to be found inside Oxford Castle. Hi, I'm Renata.
And I'm Anne. And in this week's episode of the True Hauntings podcast, we go inside Oxford Castle to learn about its history and the spectres that haunt this site in preparation for our own visit in March, where we will be able to have our very own first-hand experiences.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow. Forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
My story begins a few days ago when my dad had a day off work, so we decided to spend this valuable day as a family and went to a place we had never been before, Oxford Castle and Prison. It was used mainly as a prison from medieval Norman times until 1996, where it was used as a hotel, but some of it was open to the public to view the prisons. Because my family and I are extremely interested in history, it was the perfect day out. Our tour guide told us many ghost stories about the castle. There was a piece of flooring that we could see that was covered with wooden floorboards, but it was curved like a ripple in water. Apparently, prisoners would wheel a wheel in pairs to carry water up a tower all day, and it left this imprint in the floor. Our guide said that sometimes you can still hear their rhythmic footsteps at work. However, both me and my father's favourite place of the castle was the crypt. Here, the monks and the priests would pray around the medieval era. Our guide yet again told two stories of a ghost, a monk being spotted in the dark, far corner. Also on the wall seemed to be the face of a whistling girl. He said that it was supposed to be the ghost of a 7-year-old girl that spent time in the prison for a week, and as she waited for her sentence to be finished, she would whistle a merry tune. The crypt was dark, but very beautiful and well preserved. After our little tour and an exploration of the rest of the prison, seeing a padded cell and hospital ward, we decided to return to the crypt for a little bit of ghost hunting. It was just my brother, mum and dad and myself down there. My dad had a very expensive and very professional camera and was snapping away to capture the beauty of the place and to maybe get a few sneaky orbs or ghostly figures. We didn't encounter any ghosts, but heard the footsteps of the ghostly prisoner still at work, which was truly amazing. However, the real paranormal action only happened when we got back home. The next day, my dad put the memory stick into the computer and me and him viewed the photos from our day out. We saw every single photo. However, when we got to the photos that were of the crypt, well, they seemed to not be there. There was evidence that the photos were there. However, it said the files had been corrupted and could not display. The only photos that were there like this were the ones taken in the crypt. All the other photos of the prison were perfectly fine, well, viewable and, well, perfect. Fine. We agreed that it was very spooky and that there must have been some sort of entity or entities trying to prevent us from seeing the crypt. Maybe an angry prisoner or monk who had a secret that they didn't want found out. Whatever it was spooky and we were very excited. Please comment about what you think and thank you for reading.
Welcome to the studio, Anne.
Thank you, Renata. That was a very weird way of saying it.
It was.
You're being very thoughtful and pensive.
That's correct.
We've had no outtakes yet.
No. Well, we've only just started.
I know, but do you remember last episode? We had so many outtakes before we'd even sort of got past the introduction.
That is true.
We're being professional today.
Now, by the time you're listening to this, dear listeners, we would have been to Oxford Castle.
Only 5 days ago.
So we probably would have a different vibe, a different look.
Or we're possessed.
Thoughts about it. I'm excited to be going there. It sounds like a hoot.
Well, every other paranormal team that goes there gets loads of evidence.
Yes.
So if we don't, we suck.
Yeah. Well, we suck already, so, you know.
I'm behaving myself very well there.
The only way's up as far as what I'm concerned. But it sounds like a really great place. Now, I'm hoping that by this time what's happened is that we've gone in during the day to have a look about and taken some nice daytime photos. Mm-hmm. And now we've also gone back in during the evening and taken the tour that is available. Because we cannot afford to actually hire the place for ourselves.
No, we don't have a spare £2,000.
No, but we will go on a tour and we're being met up by the beautiful Beth.
Yes, Beth is going to come and join
our
us.
Our gorgeous friend from that now lives in England.
And we were at her wedding last year, so it's sort of appropriate that we're back with her around the same time.
Yeah. And before I start the history, I just want to give a huge shout out to one of our listeners that sent us the most beautiful heartfelt message during the week, and that's Michelle, who I believe lives in England. So hi Michelle, you are one of our epic listeners. Thank you so much for sending out that beautiful message that you sent. We're not going to tell you guys what
it was.
It is
very personal.
It's very, very personal, but you really you make what we do feel so special.
And it was very humbling to see we made such a difference in someone's life. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. So let me get on with this history here. And again, what I have tried to do, it's 1,000 years, so I've tried to kind of squish it all.
You've got 30 seconds. Go.
Squish it all into as many sort of bits that I think will be important.
Oh, they're going to be epic bits picked the best, it's just going to be epic every single one.
So it begins all the way back to medieval England when William the Conqueror just became the King of England after his victory at the Battle of Hastings in 1066. And he wanted to show off that he had so much power, and so he started to build large castles in all of the prosperous towns towns across the country.
Hey, everybody.
As you do.
Look at my giant castle.
That's right. In 1071, he set his sights on putting a castle up in Oxford, which was already a thriving Saxon walled town at the time. And since it was one of the wealthiest towns around, William decided to build a castle mound right inside those old Saxon walls. And he gave it the name of Oxford Castle. Now, the mound still exists. It's like a huge pimple that is...
I saw a photo of it this morning, actually. I went, wow, that's an impressive mound.
That's a big mound. It's a big mound. Now, to lead the construction, and I'm just going to crack up.
Have we got a good name, have we?
Oh, yes. William picked Robert Doyley.
Doyley? I don't know what's worse, a doily or a doily.
D-apostrophe-O-I-L-L-Y.
Oh, when I was cleaning out my dad's place, I found all these doilies. Does everyone remember their grandparents with the doilies? The crochet and the...
We may have to explain what it is. It's like a little...
little lace thing that they crocheted that you could put down as like a coaster or something you could put your drinks on. Or I actually kept one that had little weights on it so you could put it over your jug of milk.
Yes.
Not that I have a jug of milk sitting out anywhere, but just in case.
So William picked Robert Doyley.
We just have to say that over and over. We're going to drive people nuts.
Because he had fought alongside of him during the Norman Conquest and he believed that he could... trust Robert to do the right thing. And over time, Robert did earn his loyalty and he promoted him to a prominent position as one of the top landowners in all of Oxfordshire. And he became the hereditary royal constable of Oxford Castle. Now, to safeguard and watch the township, Doyley chose the west side of the town.
You've got to see the shoulder movements.
For Oxford Castle, using a small stream from the River Thames as a natural defence against potential enemies. Now, today that stream is known as the Castle Mill Stream, and you can go and visit it. Now, when they first built Oxford Castle... it's in a whole other paragraph till we get to that.
I've got my camera ready. I'm going to get to... She's going to have to warn me when we get to Doyley so I can video it.
Yep. When they first built Oxford Castle, it was basically just a big mound of earth, which still kind of exists, still stands there today, and it's around 20 metres tall. That's quite a big hill. It would have been surrounded by a wooden palisade. Now, if you're wondering what a palisade is, sometimes it's also called a stake wall or a paling.
Fence.
Yeah, it's typically a row of closely placed high vertical standing tree trunks or wooden iron stakes used as a fence for enclosure or as a defensive wall, and palisades can form a stockade.
You can't say we're not educational, can you?
That's right. In 1073, Robert Doyley decided to up the defences and he constructed the first stone fortifications for Oxford Castle, and that included a stone keep perched on top of the mound. Now, that would have been quite an escapade back then to get those stones up that bloody mound.
Can you imagine?
Oh, I can hear.
We'd be whinging just walking up there, never mind carrying a stone
with
you.
I can hear the profanities from here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's where we need to do
a reenactment?
An EVP.
We're not doing a reenactment.
No, an EVP session.
Okay, we'll do EVP.
I reckon,
at the base of the hill.
Yeah, they would be swearing their heads off having to build a fortified stone keep on top of that bloody mound.
Oh, you'll be pleased to know I have videoed the oily shoulders and that will be going up on YouTube. And Renata, frightfully good.
So Doyley wasn't just about the fortifications. He also established a chapel at Oxford Castle in 1074 and he named it St. George. Now, this is interesting because this may well be where Oxford University actually started.
Oh.
Because they brought in canons. And when I first looked this up, I thought they were boom, boom cannons. No, they were church cannons.
I think we've had that issue before.
Yeah. And they were, some of them were scholars, so some of them were teachers. So it's kind of not too far-fetched to think that maybe the whole thing about the university in Oxford actually started at Oxford Castle and the chapel that was built there. Mm. Now, okay, fast, I know, intriguing, terribly. Oh, I can see the eyes fluttering and everyone putting their hands to their hearts going, oh, my God, what an amazing piece of information.
Yeah, I actually have switched off and can't remember what you just said. I apologise.
So let's fast forward to the 1140s, and there's a turbulent period known as the Anarchy. Now, Robert Doyle's nephew, also named Robert Doyle, the younger, had taken over Oxford Castle by then. Oh, if it's meant to be Doyle, I'm sorry.
I'm just calling it
Doyle. So in 1142, one of the most dramatic episodes of the castle history unfolded during the civil war between King Stephen and his kunkel. Cousin.
Which is a close relation to the uncle.
Queen Maud. Now, she was vying for the throne at that time as well. So Robert had supported King Stephen, but he later switched sides and he declared his allegiance to Empress Matilda or Maud.
And is that who Matilda was? Maud?
Yes.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, and she and her army made Oxford Castle their base of operations.
I prefer Matilda.
Yeah, Matilda. Tilly, as they say a lot in Australia, Tilly. As the autumn rolled in, King Stephen marched all the way from Bristol to Oxford, and he just wanted to seize the town and lay siege to Maud in the castle. And he set up siege mounds near the castle because they all liked mounds back then.
They did. I don't think much has changed for the men. They're still enjoying their mounds. Speaking about one man in particular. Hello, Roman. How are you, my darling?
And they did this and laid siege to the place so that the supplies inside the castle would run out. Uh-huh. Now, I think you've talked about this and Maud's escape, so we will talk about this in a minute, and her being one of the ghosts is there.
Well, don't need to do it now because you've just done it.
No. So he thought that he would make them all literally starve to death. Yep, and this went on for 3 months.
That's a long time with beans on toast.
Well, there was no toast and there was no beans, so
it could have been toast.
No, they didn't have toast back then.
Well, you slice off a hunk of bread and stick it in the fire; it's toast.
So things got pretty intense, and Maud's forces grew weaker, of course. And by December, it seemed like surrender was going to be the only way out of this. But Maud had a good big long think about this, and she made other plans, and she had a daring escape where she lowered herself over the castle walls on a chilly winter's night, dressed in just a white nightdress and wrapped in a white cloak.
That's not very clever, is it? Is it winter, though?
Yes.
Oh, so the white would be
so
hidden.
She blended into the snow.
Oh, clever chook.
And she sneaked through King Stephen's camp to safety. Now, eventually Maud reached Abingdon on Thames and surrendered Oxford Castle to King Stephen the following day. Now, jumping ahead to 1216, the castle faced its only other siege, and this was King John's rebellious barons who held out against the king, and while King John managed to force the defenders to surrender, his own death later that year made the victory rather pointless. Now it becomes a prison. So after years of conflict and unstable foundations, the castle was no longer suitable for military use. So following the pattern of many medieval castles across England, Parliament decided to repurpose it as a prison in 1230.
Oh, wow. That's so long. long time ago.
And so it soon gained a fiercer reputation as a brutal jail. Now, we always make a point of saying that that we work at, Maitland Jail, had 150 years continuous service.
The longest serving prison in Australia, continuous serving prison.
Yeah, and here you've got one from 1230. Yeah. Oh, no. My God.
We don't have the amazing records of history that go that far back. But, I mean, as we've always said, we haven't been here that long.
So even from the time of the prison, there are lots of rumours of hauntings by former inmates, and they include highwaymen and people who were hanged and, all the torture and trauma of, all of that period. Now, we go to 1577, an Oxford prison held regular assizes. Now, assizes were the local civil and criminal courts. So during one session, the plague broke out, leading to what became known as the Black Assize. So this tragic event resulted in the death of Lord Lieutenant of Oxfordshire, two knights, 80 gentlemen and the entire grand jury for the session, including Sir Robert D'Oyly.
Oh, no, not Sir Robert D'Oyly.
Who was related to the castle's founder.
Was he the last of his name?
Probably, yes. Now, after this, assizes were no longer held at Oxford Castle. So literally by having that session in court, someone brought the plague in and everyone died.
And that's why we all had to stay at home during Rona.
Yeah. So finally, during the Third English Civil War from 1642 to 1652, Oxford Castle briefly returned to military use and it was refortified and garrisoned, but eventually destroyed by parliamentary troops who wanted to remove any symbols of royalist loyalty. So, interesting turn of events. Mm. Now, after this, the prison buildings were repaired and extended and the castle remained the site of the jail, though it's questionable as to whether these buildings were even repaired to a safe and habitable condition. I would probably think not. Back in the 1700s, they were throwing people into the worst conditions possible, rat-infested, putrid, horrible, horrible. If you weren't ill before you got into jail, you probably became ill after going into jail. So 1770, eventually after a long and in-depth prison report by John Howard, the official...
The Prime Minister of Australia, former
Prime
Minister.
Prison reformer at the time. And John, we've heard John Howard's name in a number of different places.
I'm just trying to be funny, Renata. You could laugh. Jeez, thanks.
So Oxford Castle and Oxford prison buildings were condemned as unfit for human habitation. And as a result, the site was taken by the government and a major redevelopment program took place. Now, it's 1770. Isn't that the year Australia got discovered?
Well, discovered by the white fellas,
So 1800s, in the beginning of the Victorian era, Oxford Prison, previously labelled inhabitable, was transformed into a modern institution by the county authorities, with a London architect coming in and building the new Oxford Prison and demolishing the old chapel attached to St George's Tower and repositioning part of the crypt. In 1805, the work was completed, and once it was finished, Oxford Prison then became home for a new county hall and remodeled county jail and court. And within its walls, you could find the debtor's tower, the governor's house and offices. There were four wings, punishment cells and an exercise yard. So from 1840 to 1876, Oxford Prison was continually developed with new buildings being added, and an armoury was added in 1854.
Not a liggery?
No, an armoury.
You didn't laugh at that one either.
No. Now, eventually the prison had been extended enough to house a significant number of prisoners, inmates, and children. And the youngest was a seven-year-old girl who was sentenced to 7 days after stealing a pram.
Why would a seven-year-old steal a pram unless she wanted it for a dollies?
Maybe, yeah.
Or maybe her mummy needed it.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
So in 1888, there was another national prison reform, and prison commissioners took control over Oxford Prison and established Her Majesty's Prison.
Remember to keep sounding like you're interested, Renata.
Her Majesty's Prison, Oxford. And in 1996, eventually Oxford Prison closed its doors for the last time, and the site was reverted to Oxfordshire County Council. Now, Oxford Castle in the 21st century became a hotel and attraction. So it lay dormant till 2006, so 10 years of nothing happening. And then in May 2006, the County Council and Oxford Preservation Trust acquired a 200-year lease and gained permission to develop the Oxford Castle Heritage Project, which would secure its sustainability. So we are up to the modern times now. And, of course, Oxford Prison and Castle is a unique heritage building that we can go in and see and explore. And it is available for the rest of the world to come in and check out. So
the convicts from Australia are coming.
Yeah.
We're going to go and check it out.
I'm not a convict, but anyway.
Oh, no, you're not. I am.
No.
I'm not sure if my people actually came over as convicts or they chose to come to Australia.
Mm.
Not sure. The rapscallion in me thinks it might have been convicts. Rightio. Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
I find it sort of interesting that you mentioned they turned part of the hotel into accommodation or a hotel or something, if I remember correctly, along the lines there. You, mm-hmm. you mentioned that.
Yeah.
I actually did look at booking us into that motel for or hotel for the night that we were going to be investigating. And, the prices were sort of a little out of our budget for the four of us to go stay.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got Beth coming as well, that it was really out of our budget. So I've just got the website up because, you know, we've got to get the latest
you
prices.
You didn't tell me about prices for staying.
Oh, didn't I?
Although, having been to the other converted jail in England that we have been to,
Bodmin,
and seen the prices there, I don't doubt that these are similar.
Yes, yeah, so we were going to be there for the 9th of March, and to stay there for one night for two people was £226.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I mean, the places, it looks beautiful, but it was...
Yeah.
So we'd have to double that. So it would have been more than what it's costing us to hire the ancient ram in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the ghosts. Oh, actually, I might start off with how they're maintaining the castle by running ghost tours.
Uh-huh.
And they're embracing it like most of England and Ireland. They embrace their ghostly history, and they have various packages and prices you've got, but we have booked through a company that hires the castle and then they sort of sell it out there to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the 2023 rate, so if you want to ghost hunt before midnight, it's $165.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
5 pound. I'm assuming this is per person. A ghost hunt after midnight is £210.
That's per person?
No, it can't be, can it? So per hour, no, it must be to hire the jail.
Ah.
Then if you want it from 9 p.m. till 8 a.m. in the morning, it is £1,375.
Uh-huh.
Which, I mean, if you look at the size of the place, it's not that bad. But you can check out more at oxfordcastleandprison.co.uk if you're interested in doing that. That too is out of our budget at the moment. I liked what they included in the sleepover package. It includes private hire of the castle and includes everything found in the ghost hunt package, plus a breakfast of pastries, fruit juice, tea and coffee. Now, we'll get on to the types of entities that can be found within the walls. And I found on the website for this castle, they had a nice little selection of the ghosties there, but there was way more than what they had listed. Now, the one you mentioned was the Empress Matilda and how she had snuck out and fleed across the... Fleed? She jumped.
Fleed.
That's correct. She was fleeing across the frozen river. Apparently, she's been spotted many times, often dressed in a white cloak. Her spirit really frightened a new guard during the prison days. They spotted the ghostly figure entering an off-limits area and they raised the alarm. Now, this is when it was a jail.
Mm-hmm.
But there were no prisoners missing. How embarrassing would that be if you've raised the alarm because you've seen something lurking around there and then it wasn't.
Whoopsie.
Optanana. Now we have the ghost of King Charles I. And they call him the headless ghost, but apparently he is the sometimes headless ghost.
Okay, so sometimes he has a head and sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah. King Charles I loved the city of Oxford. Is that the one with all the bicycles that we tried to drive through?
I think it
is. And
I
ended up with it. Oh, that was Cambridge. I can't remember. It seems so he loved it that much that it seems that his ghost actually visits, you know, as we say. They tend to hang out in the places they loved. He was at the centre of the English Civil War between the Royalists and the Parliamentarians, and he was found guilty of treason and lost his head for his supposed crimes. The ill-fated king's spirit now seems to wander the University of Oxford, sometimes without a head. There is another Royalist ghost that has been spotted in the area. This is, this is a great name, Colonel Francis Windybank.
Windybank
met a gruesome end during the English Civil War and was executed at Oxford. Now, he liked to host, you know, parties, and he had a ball at Bletchington Park. Bletchington, it's not the most romantic sounding location, is it? So he did that in an effort to raise people's spirits during the conflict, you know, make them all a little bit chipper. Chipper, how are you? Right, they think that a parliamentarian spy was snuck in and Cromwell's army attacked. Now, Windybank surrendered so that he could protect his friends. And then forced to defend himself to the king at the Royalist base in Oxford. They sentenced him to death and the execution was against the town wall. Now, allegedly, he haunts that site and it's known as the Dead Man's Walk. Then we've got George Napier from 1610. Now, this one was executed for treason. The gallows apparently are now still part of the Oxford Castle prison, so we might be able to see the gallows. I do like a gallows. He faced the punishment of being hung, drawn, and quartered. So that's where you were hanged. And then you were put on the stretch, or they tied you to four different horses, I think, and they whipped them on the arse, and then you were toinged into many pieces. Well, how many horses you were. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. And
you were dead at that point in time.
Yeah, the family, they then displayed his bits on the city gates. Sounds very Game of Thrones-ish. Now, the family did manage to find most of his bits and bobs, but they never managed to find his head. His head disappeared.
Well, it would have been attached to the torso, wouldn't it?
You would think. So maybe they had five horses.
Oh.
Anyway, apparently George is still riding around Oxford on a phantom steed, searching for his missing bits, his missing head.
Oh, no. Poor George.
Oh, no. It's a horrible fate, isn't it?
But weren't they cruel bastards back then?
Horrible.
Honestly.
Horrible. Now we're going into, every location we've got to, it's got to have a monk. A monk in a black cloak or something like that, don't they?
It's got to be a monk.
So the castle mound is supposed to be haunted I've got to the wrong one there. No, we're not going to do the mound. We're going to go underneath. We're going to the crypt below Oxford Castle.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's allegedly a monk that hangs out down there. Now, they said perhaps uncharacteristically for a religious man, he is noted for his bad language.
Mm.
So he's cussing and carrying on down there. I vaguely remember when we went to, what was the castle we went to where we caught up with Joanne? Dudley?
Dudley Castle.
Dudley. And there was a religious monk man, whatever it was, down there as well, who was a bit nasty.
Yes.
Oh, who would think that they would be nasty?
Oh, heavens. Who would think?
Who would think? Now,
they didn't make their own mead back then either, did they? No, they wouldn't have gotten drunk.
No.
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 They just prayed.
Now, we have a story.
Knelt on stone in a dark crypt praying.
Mm. When
That's
we were
what they did.
Trying to put ourselves into coffins down in the Dudley one and our asses did not fit. I had to lay on my side. They were skinny when they were dead in those days.
They were tiny people. Tiny.
Now, I've got a report about a security guard.
Yes.
And what they saw. So they have nightly patrols, obviously, and quite often they're reporting things like unexplained bangs and scrapes and clicking and all that sort of stuff. However, there was one night where one of the guards, who was coming to the end of his patrol with his dog, so he had a dog, and they stopped. The dog just stopped still and started to back up and growled at something that was in front of them. At that stage, the guy looked up and was looking around to see what it was. Mm-hmm. And he saw that there was two large shadow figures appearing before him. And he basically turned heel and ran as fast as he could in the opposite direction. Now, this is the sad bit. You're not going to like this. A few days later, his dog died suddenly.
No.
Believing he'd been frightened to death.
Oh, no.
Now, that was the only, because I'd saw that report a few times, that was the only one that I saw that said his dog died. So I'm just wondering if somebody's added that in for a little bit of, let's make this story more exciting.
Mm.
Now, we have, we're going back to the mound now. We have Mary Blandy. I like it when we get specific ghosts. So this is one that comes from 1752. A woman by the name of Mary Blandy was sentenced to the gallows for poisoning her father. Now, Mary was born into a wealthy family and was raised as quite an intelligent woman. When her father, Francis Blandy, was worried his daughter was becoming a spinster, he found her a husband in Scotland. Captain Henry Cranston was the perfect candidate. Mary was very charmed by him as well. But shortly after they courted, a problem came to light.
Uh-oh.
Henry was married back in Scotland.
Oh, no.
Up to Nana. So poor old.
You'd think the dad would have worked that one out.
So dad sent him away. But Mary was pissed. She was heartbroken because she really liked the wandering Willie. And when Henry was sent packing, get your words together, Anne. Mary was heartbroken but delighted when Henry sent her a package containing a love potion. You dirty boy. The included a letter, told her to put it in her father's dish So he would give his blessings to their marriage.
Oh.
Uh-oh. Oh. Blinded by love, Mary did what she was told, but when her father got sick the next day, she started to worry. Because she was intelligent. Her father's condition was getting worse and he finally died. The love potion contained arsenic and Mary was betrayed by a couple of servants who had seen her tampering with her father's food. Even the press was present for her hanging. So she is one of the ghosts that is allegedly still hanging around in Oxford Castle.
Ooh, we need to talk to Mary.
We do. There is often a white mist that appears. It rises from one of the stairwells and disappears at the top, and disembodied footsteps can be heard. Oh, that would be so cool. There is a story of some group doing a seance in the 1970s. Now, they said a group of people did a seance in one of the cells. They couldn't finish their session because they were attacked by a dark, malevolent entity. Oh. Apparently, poltergeist activity suddenly erupted and things got so bad that they had to call in a priest to do an exorcism.
Oh, okay. Mm.
They figured that whatever they had awoken needed to be put back where it came from, but
that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, apparently it didn't work.
No. Fancy that.
Fancy
An
that.
An exorcism not working.
Surprise! Now, well, I have one here. Now,
does that mean the poltergeist is still there?
Oh, maybe. Maybe. Now, you mentioned the assizes.
Yes.
Where they all ended up with the plague. All yes. Right, so Roland Jenks, in 6th of July 1577, foul-mouthed bookseller was brought before the assizes to be tried for his allegiance to the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
He was found guilty and was sentenced to lose both his ears.
Oh.
Jenks was furious and pronounced a violent curse on the court.
A curse on the court.
A curse on the court, the jury and the judges. Almost immediately after his trial, people started to fall victim to a mysterious illness.
Oh.
They literally dropped to their death. Around 700 people fell ill and the infection raged until August 12th. So that's
wow.
Over a month. By then, two judges, the coroner, the sheriff, a clerk and many members of the jury were dead. So that is why the curse is referred to as the Black Assizes.
Yeah.
Isn't that a good story?
Mm.
Now, this one's a bit tragic, so I'm going to put in a warning before this one. This one's a little bit gruesome. This is... where did I get this from? It's about Anne Green, who has been tried for infanticide. Sounds like insecticide.
Yeah.
She had been working as a scullery maid for Sir Thomas Reed at Dun's Tew, where she was seduced and impregnated by Reed's teenage grandson. Green was reportedly not even aware she was pregnant until she miscarried at 6 months.
Oh, no.
Alone and afraid, she tried to bury the body in a nearby cesspit. However, the body was discovered and her master was told. So rather than feeling sorry for the young lady mm-hmm. or any sort of empathy at all,
mm-hmm.
Her cruel master had Anne arrested and tried for infanticide under the Concealment of Birth of Bastards Act in 1624.
Wow. Birth of Bastards
Birth
Act.
Of Bastards. That's where basically they made them, I suppose, own up to their wandering willies.
Yes.
Now, the hanging was not a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So we know with the hangings, because we have our wonderful nosy Bob from Maitland Jail, mm-hmm. how you had to weigh the body, you had to measure the rope, you had to know the drop, and you had to work it all out so that it was a clean death. Sadly, That didn't happen. So the long drop technique of hanging designed to break the victim's neck quickly and cleanly did not come into usage until the 19th century. In the 17th century, hanging victims were often left dangling from the noose for quite some time until they slowly suffocated to death. Now, according to accounts, Anne Green kicked and twitched from the gibbet or the gibbet for nearly half an hour.
Oh, boy.
While her friends thumped her chest with the butt of a musket and pulled on her legs in an attempt to the sooner to dispatch her out of her pain. So that's the whole thing where they talk about they're trying to grab the legs and to break the neck. As I said, I wanted to warn you about this one, guys. They did eventually take her body down and they took her to... They did take her down, but she was observed to be still breathing. So a lusty fellow who stood by her stamped on her chest and stomach as hard as he could, thinking to do an act of charity in ridding her out of the small relics of a painful life. Now, you'd think the story would end there, wouldn't you? But it doesn't.
It doesn't. It goes on.
It goes on. Her body was taken back to an anatomy school where they were going to dissect her.
Mm.
The next day, we've got a doctor, Dr. William Petty. They opened up Green's coffin and immediately noticed that the body was unusually warm. And realised that a spark of life had not yet been extinguished. So he and his colleagues began treating her injuries, and soon Anne Green regained consciousness. In a few days, she was well enough to eat chicken and eventually made a full recovery. So not only did she suffer that hanging, she suffered from the people who were hitting her with the butt of a rifle. Mm-hmm. Then the person that stomped on her chest,
mm-hmm.
she survived it.
Mm-hmm.
So after that happened, Dr. Petty and others petitioned the Oxford court to have Anne Green pardoned of her crimes, arguing that her miraculous recovery was a sign from God and that God had intervened and that proved her innocence.
Yep.
They were successful, likely as a result of the public reaction to Green's recovery, but also because Sir Thomas Reed had died shortly after Green's hanging and so was not able to petition for a second execution.
No.
Again, no. God intervened.
Yes.
So her story actually ends happily. She did receive a reprieve and she went on to marry, have children and live to a ripe old age.
My goodness, what a story to tell.
I know. Nice to have a little bit of brightness in the darkness there. Now, I have to point out that that is not a ghost story, but it was really interesting. I really enjoyed seeing a happy ending for someone. Now, I then thought I'll go for a hunt and have a look for some information on Reddit, because you introduced me to Reddit and all the things you can find there.
Yep.
So I went down a bit of a rabbit hole with Reddit and found this story, and it was a photo. I took this photo way back in 2009 during a visit to Oxford Castle Prison with my cousin. The photo was an accidental, unintentional shot taken on my digital camera while we were climbing back down the stairs from the tower. Now, I could see how that would happen because I freak out on stairs and I have to have a hand on either side.
Yep.
And if I had my camera sort of clutched in the hand while I was trying to go down, I could see how you could accidentally take a photo. It appears to show a cloaked figure, white dress in the doorway.
Oh.
Who do we know that's got a white dress?
Maud.
Yes, Matilda. Now, the spooky bit is that I am quite certain that the room was completely empty with no white dress as me and my cousin poked our heads in the doorway during the climb up the tower. I hadn't noticed this photo until we returned home and I was browsing pics from that day. Apparently, there is a commonly seen ghost at the castle of Empress Matilda, who is said to be draped in a white cloak and robe. I also know that the castle does run ghost tours during the night with staff dressed up as characters, so we've got to be mindful of that, from the castle's past, which would provide a good explanation. But as I said, this room was empty and we didn't see any other costumes on display or staff dressed in character in the tower during the trip, which was in the middle of the day. I am wondering if anyone from Oxford or who is familiar with the castle can help explain, debunk my spooky photo. I don't really believe in ghosts, but this has always given me the heebie-jeebies. What makes my skin crawl is how eerily similar the various artist renditions of Empress Matilda's escape from Oxford Castle are to my photo of the ghost. Now, I've seen the photo, and it looks like a fifth of a person standing behind the stone wall entrance of a doorway, and they're in the dark, and you can just see, not even a fifth, it's probably an eighth. You can see the cloak down to the ground. Yes, it is white. You can't make out whether it's male or female. My suspicions is it's a mannequin.
Okay.
But what did people say? This one, musician, obvious, 5900. I actually spent the night on top of that big old mound with a tree on top. If that is the place you are talking about, it was 2005, I think, and had missed my train home to Liverpool. I was a bit drunk and thought I'd just sit up there all night. Throughout the night, I could hear footsteps behind me and approaching, but when I turned around, there was no one there. This happened about three or four times. The last time I waited and waited until the footsteps were literally right behind me. Then I turned my head. No one was there. Spooky. Which, somebody replied, Influence Creative 191. That's because you were drunk. Oh, look, these crack me up. Now, this one was it looks like your pic was taken at the base of the tower stairs looking into the ground floor room with the capstan wheel. We had a mannequin there that was dressed as a knight in a hooded cloak when I was there about 2015 to 17. It may well be the same one in your pic. It does look similar. It used to scare the crap out of me as I'd always forget it was there.
Mannequins aren't good.
Now, I liked this one. This one was a reply. If ghosts are real, why would the ghost of the Empress Matilda haunt Oxford Castle? She escaped from Oxford Castle. If she was going to haunt in England, it would be around Westminster Abbey where her coronation was blocked.
True.
Good point.
True.
Unless it's the trauma of her escaping has imprinted. Who knows?
You'd think they'd see her going down the wall and outside, running away, rather than within.
Yeah, just standing in a, lurking in a doorway.
Unless that 3 months of trauma of trying to work out how to get out is what's imprinted.
Then we have this one. I worked at Oxford Castle as a tour guide last summer and can safely say I never experienced anything explicitly paranormal. With that being said, I never liked the feeling of the crypt area. I sometimes got nervous when I had to go down to turn off the lights, and sometimes guests would react weirdly when they came in. The tour guides liked to joke there was a ghost of a monk named Brother Bernard down there. Mm-hmm. We'll have to remember that name. But nobody had actually seen anything. So they just made up a name, but I like it. The castle and prison is a very spooky building which lends itself to paranormal speculations, but I don't think there's much there but dust and cobwebs.
Oh, well, shut up.
But
whoever you are.
Then we go on to someone who's going to explain it.
Okay.
Have you heard the theory about why castles are so commonly haunted? The stones are full of quartz crystals. Quartz crystals also are what makes watches tick in regular intervals. Supposedly when a strong, often traumatic energy happens, the quartz in the room records this flash of energy and can continue to pulse this energetic impression out periodically. How cool how there's a bit of both science and ghosts in this theory. Most paranormal simply has science that we can't yet understand, measure, describe. I fully believe in spirit energies from other realms, if you want to call it that. I've studied with a lot of mediums. I'm special. Then the reply to that, I mean, only if you run a steady electric current through the quartz. The quartz in the wristwatch won't just keep going once the battery dies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where science and the theories that are out there don't quite come together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have somebody who explains it. Last one. I worked at the castle for years as a teenager. It was my Saturday job, and I can confirm that the floor had rotted away in some parts of that room, so we were unable to take touring guests there, but we did store stuff there, so it likely just be a mannequin under a sheet. Sorry, but the basement is super haunted. Everyone I know who worked there had a story about it. The tower, not so much. I hope I was your guide and that your tour had fun.
Oh, so nice.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my little regalia of the ghosts and the stories of the Oxford Castle. I'm actually really excited to go there.
Yes. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah.
You sound so excited.
No, I am. I like a good castle and...
And jail. We've got both in one.
Yes. Yes. And there's a store. A shop.
There's a You've already checked out the gift shop.
You know, I like a good gift
you
shop.
You do. You do. I get my magnet. I'm a big spender.
That means we can get Mike something as well.
Oh, yes. We always try to get him something from a jail somewhere. Yes. Now, Renata, is this a true haunting?
Look... It could be. I'm open. I'm going in with an open mind and an open heart. And let's see what we can get.
I'm going to say there's got to be a ghost there. And let's see if we can stir up that poltergeist and get them to throw things at us.
Yeah, some rocks.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. You know the thing I go on with here. Please consider becoming a Patreon, a Grand Pooh Bar Patreon, and support our work for 10 measly US dollars a month. You'll get some outtakes, not that we've had any this episode, and some behind the scenes and some extra readings and bits and bobs as we do. I've used that a lot today, haven't I? And also you can buy us a coffee if you want to do something that's a one-off. We'd super appreciate that. But right now we're going to head off and do Heaven's Day as well. Oh, we're going to watch a video. Check out our stuff on Anne and Renata Frightfully Good YouTube. It's going off. All right, guys, we'll see you next time.
Stay spooky.
Be frightfully good. Look at us, we still can't remember it. How many years have we been doing this?
Well, don't be
a dickhead. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow at Anne and Renata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, or visit their website, www.anneandrenata.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.